Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Best People We Know radio show. This is where you'll meet experts and celebrities who share their success secrets with you to help you be your most successful best too. Your host, Deb Scott, is a certified professional coach at Discover the Amazing You Coaching and author of the award-winning motivational book, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue, Turning Your Upside-Down World Right Side Up. The Best People We Know radio show brings you powerful resources, effective ideas, and transformational tools you can use to educate, inspire, and motivate you to be your most purposeful, peaceful, happy best. So get ready to experience mind vitamins to feed your whole soul. Good change is about to happen. The Best People We Know radio show. Here's your host, Deb Scott.
Well, good morning. Best people out there that I know, that's definitely you. We have a best guest. You're just going to love her. I want to thank BTR for making her a staff pick. Yay! I'm telling you, I'm always excited when that happens. And BTR staff, they know what they're talking about because you are all going to have the gift of an amazing epiphany today. Doesn't that sound delicious? I tell you, I have this book in my hands by Elise, Epiphany. I have read it cover to cover. Phenomenal. Love, love, love it. You will too. Absolutely. It's going to be a blow your mind show. So I want to make sure a couple things before I bring Elise on for you. It took us a long time to get her on the show, so we're very grateful for that. I just want to remind you, if you go to my website, greenskyandbluegrass.com, you sign up for the monthly Mind Vitamin News, you'll get a list of all of our great guests for the month. And I'm telling you, there's no excuses. These people are just phenomenal. They're the best of the best to help you live your best life. So there is no other excuse for you to not get all this great information. You can download the show on iTunes for free, and you can put Elise and her tips and wisdom onto your, you know, mobile device. You can listen to her on the grocery store if you can't catch the whole show today. So there's all sorts of ways to listen to this information. And also, I'm here in the office, and those are my dogs. They're all excited, too, in the background. If you want to follow us on BTR, you can do that as well, and they'll give you updates. So it's a terrific way to get all the tools that you can trust. Well, Elise Ballard. Okay. If you don't already know who she is, let me tell you, because here's her theme. One moment. Can it really change your whole life? Well, Elise Ballard says yes. And she has some stories today to share with us from her best-selling book. It's just going to really have you look at your life in a profound way. Elise is an actress. She's a director. She's a best-selling author. And in this book, Epiphany, and it's right there on the picture. It's a beautiful blue book. It's got a nice exclamation point in there. It's green. It's terrific. She has so many stories. She has epiphany moments of Dr. Mehmet Oz, Ali McGraw, Deepak Chopra, so many more, over 50 actually. She's the host and creator of the online community and website, The Epiphany Channel. She's author of this great best-selling book that has true stories of sudden insight to inspire, encourage, and transform. This is published by Random House. Has over 50 interviews of amazing people from all walks of life where they recount their personal stories of, you know, what was this one moment that changed their whole life and others as well. So whether you're discovering your purpose in life, awakening to new possibilities, or finding a new direction, even after a catastrophic setback, each person's epiphany is a gift, providing new insight into these remarkable lives and a window into the universal truths that connect us all. This is a truly inspirational read. It's very easy to read. It's simple. Not a lot of pages in each one of these stories, but I am encouraging you to go to the Epiphany Channel, Epiphany Channel, channel.com. You can find out more about Elise there. Sign up for her newsletter. Get her book. It's a great Christmas gift right now. We're thinking about that, too. It is a pleasure and a privilege to have Elise Ballard with us today. Hi, Elise.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good, Deb. Thank you so much for having me on. What a beautiful introduction. Thank you.
Oh, my gosh. I could have been the whole show with just an introduction on you, but we would never get there, and it was probably long enough. I feel like people in the audience are saying, okay, Deb, all right, get to the good stuff. Come on, we want to hear the story. But, you know, it's a process, so thank you for your patience. I love your book, and what I love about the book, and I know others are feeling exactly the same way, I can see why it's a bestseller, just really gave me so many aha moments, and I just felt so connected and so at peace and so inspired and so hopeful reading these stories that, you know, I have to say a lot, even, you know, whether it was a famous person, you know, Dr. Michael Beckwith or Dr. Mehmet Oz or Deepak Chopra or somebody, you know, it was like, wow, I would have never known that they had this type of a moment at this exact, in this exact way. It was like a real up close and personal revelation to me, some of the things that you had in there. I can't wait to get to the stories, but I would love for you to share with listeners, this all was catalyzed from your own personal epiphany, which you had during your, I guess, when you were doing a show acting, you were playing a part, and in playing this part, you really came to some epiphany moment about your real life and some of the changes that inspired. Could you share with the audience a little bit about that?
Sure. I had been. You want me to go into the whole story when I was married and all of that?
Yeah, just a little.
Okay.
I think that if people could get an idea that, you know, you were married, you're going along. I just think that there's a real segue between the person you were acting as and that divine connection between, you know, the real life and the acting life.
Yeah. So, art imitating life, life imitating art kind of thing that they talk about. Yes, that happens all the time. And in this case, basically I was playing a role in a play, and I had been married for 8 years at this point, and we had been very unhappy for quite a while. But neither one of us could seem to extricate ourselves completely from the relationship. And I sort of talk about it as being stuck in life. There are different ways in life we find ourselves stuck sometimes. And I was stuck, and a lot of times it does happen in our relationships. And I was the queen of being stuck in something that wasn't working but just couldn't seem to change it. And I was doing a play where I was playing a woman who is desperately in love with her husband and she wants to have a baby, but she finds out she's unable to. And so she goes to tell her husband this, and because feels so bad about this, and also he feels guilty, he was a good guy, but he ends up telling her that he's had a one-night stand. And so the drama that ensues from that, and then we find out at the end, towards the end, that this woman is also pregnant. So at the end of the play, I go to this other woman as my character, and I ask her to put the baby up for adoption. And at the end of the play, my husband and I adopt this baby, and everybody lives happily ever after. So in doing preparation for this role, I researched a lot of fertility, everything I could about fertility treatments, as well as adoption. And I happened to not know anything about adoption for some reason. I didn't have any close friends that were adopted, and no one in my family had ever been adopted. So I did all this research on it. I found the adoption brochure that I handed to the woman on stage. I wanted to be the one to do that. And so opening night, I was reprinting the adoption brochure so I'd have a fresh one of this play that we were doing. And I was standing over the printer waiting for this adoption brochure to print out. And as it was coming towards me, slowly coming out of the printer, I suddenly just had this thought. And the thought was, I could do that. I don't have to stay. And in that instant of that thought, I realized that the reason I'd been staying in this marriage for so long and struggling was because I had a deep, deep-seated fear that I might never have a child, a biological child of my own, if I left. And because of the research that I had done, on this role and the work I had done in that moment, I had an epiphany that, you know, that was the reason that I'd really been staying. I'd never realized it. I had never thought about it. It never in any way, shape, or form it had occurred to me. And not only was it revealed to me, but it was released from me in that exact instant. And I mean, when I say that, I mean that my entire body felt lighter. It was as if a huge weight that I'd been unaware that I was carrying around snapped free from me. And then I was finally able to start taking action to change my life. And within like 8 weeks, I woke up one day and looked around me and went, how did I get here? I mean, my life was completely different. I was subletting an apartment, so nothing around me was the same. I was single, and I'd been with the same man for over a quarter of my life. And so it was just, and I went, what, how did I get here? And all of a sudden, my mind flashed back like a movie to that instant at the printer. And I went, oh my goodness, I had an epiphany. That is what they talk about when they talk about someone having an epiphany. And I started asking people, do you think you've ever had an epiphany? And that's how everything started. And then with my filmmaking background and such, I started asking people on camera when I'd be working. And then one thing led to another, and I was developing it as a reality show. So I told someone the idea that I would string all these ideas together and make it into a documentary or something. And they wanted to do it as a reality show eventually, they called me. And so I was doing that and writing the epiphanies out for the treatment that I was developing, and I realized how powerful they were in the written form as well as video. So one thing led to another, and I got the book deal with Epiphany, but I still kept filming them, and that's why I film a ton of them, and they're on the website. And we're working again on the reality shows and film part of Epiphany and still collecting Epiphanies. But that's how it started, from that moment at the printer.
I tell you, I always love, and you're talking about doing a reality show, real life is the best reality show, I think, that
right?
anybody could ever ask for.
Exactly.
And I think it was, maybe it was, I don't know, Aristotle. We have Aristotle or Socrates or one of them that said something about, the greatest teachers, they teach what they want to learn themselves. And I was just fascinated by how you came to write this book, in that your epiphany caused you to ask other people, have you ever had this happen to you? And then finding out that so many did, then you started asking so many other people who you have in the book and then on the TV channel that you have on theepiphanychannel.com. But what these stories do, I think, at least from my own personal experience, reading them really stretched my mind, my heart, my soul. It expanded my perception of what was possible. Obviously, these have transformed your life. I want to get into some of the specifics of some of them that I was just most fascinated by. It's hard to pick a favorite. I might actually say that, I don't know, well, I'll tell you later which one I thought was my favorite, but you had some characteristics, some common threads. Every epiphany, you said, included the following: listening, belief, action, and serendipity. Do you want to share a little bit with listeners what you mean by those?
Sure. Well, as you pointed out, in hearing these epiphanies, what's interesting about them is everybody has a different way of having their epiphanies. They can be from the smallest interior shift, like I had a thought and suddenly I was drastically changed and finally able to drastically change my life. Or sometimes they're crazily dramatic, miraculous, you know what I mean? Miracles mm-hmm. that happen, so to speak. So everyone has them differently, but they mean something different to each person. But at the end of the day, you can boil them down to universal truth that everyone can relate to for the most part. So that's when you say that when you read them, you get something out of them. And that's exactly been my experience as well. My life has been completely transformed just by collecting and hearing all these different stories. And the four things that always happened when anyone had this an epiphany, you can't really force an epiphany. You just can't. Not a life-changing epiphany. You can do these small creative epiphanies or problem-solving epiphanies. We can create in a lab, so to speak, to measure them and how those work.
Mm-hmm.
But these life-changing epiphanies, you cannot force necessarily. But the four things that are always happening that people can cultivate in their lives are listening, which meant every single person I talked to was listening. They were open to these moments for some reason. They were paying attention, whether they were contemplating the sky, whether they were in prayer or meditation, whether they were just listening to someone, or whether they were in some kind of absolute crisis. You know, they lost a job, they were fighting a serious illness, or even lost a loved one. The second thing that everyone had in common was that they all had absolute belief in these moments. And when I say that, I meant they believed in what they meant for them, the truth of the moment for them. No matter what anyone else thought, no matter how crazy it might seem, even to our own rational minds, they believed in what it meant for them. And then the third thing that came into play is that then they took action on these epiphanies. And this is a really important point, because an epiphany by definition is a moment of sudden or great revelation. That's a definition. So there were some people I spoke with who actually had an epiphany. They were listening. They had it. They believed the epiphany. They believed in what it meant for them, but they didn't take action on it. So it didn't change their life, you know. But every single person who took action on it, and when I say take action, usually it was just the tiniest baby step towards what that epiphany compelled them to do. And usually they had no idea what the second step would be. But then the fourth element comes in that I refer to as serendipity. So it's as if the universe or the world conspires to support you in this action. And the second step is revealed. And then the third step, and then the fourth step. And it's like, yes, this is right for you. Yes, keep going. So those four things of listening, belief, taking action, and then watching serendipity, being grateful for it when it comes into play, because it will. And you just keep, if you can keep kind of cultivating those things in your lives, the most exciting things happen.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. You know, the one with Deepak Chopra, I had never heard this before. I think that some of your interviews, you know, you mentioned that people don't really necessarily share their epiphanies, that it can be very personal. And this really struck me because, and I'll actually just read it from the book. It says, Deepak, in this interview, you said, "In 1980, I was practicing medicine in Boston, Massachusetts," right here in Boston. "It is a habit of mine to take a walk after meditation. One day at about 10 o'clock in the morning, I was taking my morning walk in Fenway Park area, pondering why some of my patients were healing and others weren't. And suddenly it hit me. People have the power to heal themselves. I had been observing over my years of practice that these rare patients who had done so, who had recovered from the illnesses, and it occurred to me at this moment that there was a common factor. They moved from a place of fear to a place of extreme joy and what I would call the intoxication of love. It hit me that they all had the same kind of shift in consciousness. You know, it sounds simplistic when I say it, but actually the shift is very profound and deep. For 40 years, people had been studying the effects of stress, but nobody had actually studied the biology of joy or love. So it occurred to me that that's where we need to move." And of course, he's dedicated his entire life. I mean, as really everybody knows who Deepak Chopra is, he's dedicated his life to this. And what struck me was, here he was walking, and he told you at 10 o'clock in the morning. I mean, it was such an epiphany moment. He knew the exact, down to the time, where he was, you know, the weather conditions. It was shocking to me, you know, that was, I mean, did that surprise you, or you know, had you already been aware of that with him?
You mean his particular epiphany, or everybody who has an epiphany, they tend to know exactly when it happened, where they were, you know what I mean? Like, it's visceral. For everybody, usually. I don't think anyone's ever told me an epiphany that doesn't remember exactly all the details. That's the nature of them. You know what I mean? That's the difference. People say, well, what's the difference of an epiphany and a realization? You know, and, you know, by definition, they are the same thing on some level. But the nature of an epiphany is this just instantaneous quality that's just a revelation that's so profound that, you know, it's and it's got this instant quality that you know you never forget it. And I always say it's a moment of sudden or great revelation that usually changes your life in some way, because we're asking about the biggest ones, we're asking about the greatest epiphanies. And as far as Deepak is concerned, his particular epiphany, he was such an interesting interview for me because it was the shortest interview I had, basically. And he was very he does that. He practices what he preaches in the way that he uses no extra words. Does that make sense? Like, I mean, literally, that interview is practically verbatim. I didn't have to edit out a word. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I thought when I hung up with him, I was like, oh, darn, I don't have enough. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then when I wrote it, I went, wow, this is really powerful, simple, and profound. And I talk about him. I spoke at TED, and I use this as one of the examples of being one of those simple interior shifts that then changes the entire trajectory of a life, and look how many people he's affected because he took action on his epiphany. Because he changed his life and his focus and his trajectory, he's touched millions of lives, you know. I talk about that at the end of that talk, and one of the things I'm exploring now is the ripple effect of epiphanies. We all have heard about the ripple effect, right? Like, you know, a pebble goes in water and the ripple goes out, and we all hear that we all are affecting people around us. Everything you do sends out a ripple into the world. But you can look at this one prism of epiphanies, these moments that we actually have a story around, and then you can see, you can follow how that ripple went out into the world. So when you are changing your life, and a lot of times these beautiful moments will be the catalyst for that, be aware that it's going to affect everybody around you. It will change many lives. I opened the book with G.W. Bailey's Epiphany because he speaks directly to that. When one life changes, many lives change. And
you know,
true.
I love that. It is true. And that's a great story. And we'll talk about that. I just want listeners to know we have a ton of people in the chat room. And
really?
Yeah, lots of people. Hi, everybody. We have Vicky Chat. She has a radio show. And
oh, cool.
We have some PR agents in there and a lot of guests. So I just want to thank everybody for joining us. If you have an epiphany, I mean, you know, do you have an epiphany out there that you'd like to share with us? You can call 347-637-1318. You can share your shine with us, as Elise is sharing hers, because we all do help each other. That's a good epiphany to have. And you just press #1. That'll put you through on the switchboard. Or you can type in the chat what your question might be. I did love this opening story that you had. And, you know, I think that sometimes you're an actress, but I think sometimes we see actors, actresses, or famous people, and we think that somehow maybe, you know, they don't have red blood cells, or they're designed differently, or maybe they don't act, you know, their blood is purple, or they don't feel pain, they don't have nerve endings like we do, or they never cry. And I think the story, I think this particular story with him struck me because, you know, it was just one of those things that he expected people, children that had cancer, to be sad or to be miserable. And seeing all of the children together that had cancer because of his godchild, that he just broke down and cried because his whole paradigm of what he thought should be just collapsed. And then he became an advocate, I don't know how many years it's been, for this particular charity. Do you want to share with listeners about this story? Because it was a real touching one.
Sure. G.W. Bailey, and he was the sergeant in Police Academy, and he was on MASH. He's an amazing actor. And he right now he's on the show Major Crimes on TNT. He was on The Closer, and now he's on Major Crimes. And he was actually in the play with me that I had my epiphany in. So we've been friends. So I interviewed him because I know he has great stories. And I never know what anyone is going to say when I interview them. It's really interesting. And when you bring that up, like, are you surprised? Every single time I hear someone's story, I'm surprised. It's so fascinating how that works. But GW was visiting his goddaughter. His goddaughter had begged him to come visit her while she went on this trip with this nonprofit organization called Sunshine Kids. That what they do is they take children battling cancer on trips. So they get to have fun. So they get to be around other kids, and they're in the same position as them. So he goes to visit her for a day because he was in the middle of shooting stuff and whatever. This was back in the 80s, I guess, because he goes to this thing. As you said, he hears all the kids playing. They're at an event at a firehouse. And he walks around the corner, and he sees all these children just playing with exuberance, you know, just having the time of their lives, completely not thinking about, you know, what they're dealing with. And he, it just struck him, as he said, and he had to go back to his car and pull himself together. And he said he's never been the same, and he realized, you know, I have to be part of this, celebrating our children. And so he ended up volunteering for them, and now he's been the executive director of Sunshine Kids for the last at least 25 years. It's more than that now. And it's grown exponentially under his leadership. And he's still running it, you know.
And I think this thread, this common thread of people, you know, when you have an epiphany, you remember it, it changes your life. And I love how you say you take an action on it. But I think that it's shocking. Probably it surprises the person that's having it more than anybody else, because it's so unexpected. But I wanted to read from him, Shabib Bailey. Through this epiphany, I have gained a great appreciation of time. I realized how important and precious our time here is. We lost Brandy when she was 17, and though many children that have been with Sunshine Kids are now doctors and nurses and countless other professionals as they've grown up and beaten their disease, I've also had to bury too many children over the years. And then he goes on to say, the idea of epiphanies is fascinating to me because one human being's experience can have such an impact on so many people. And it's not that they're even trying to have an impact. I'm not talking about the Paul on the road to Damascus and the angel comes to visit him and he feels compelled to change the world. That's not at all what I'm talking about. It's just that when one life changes, many lives are changed because all of the people connected to that one life are affected. And I think that if you're out there listening right now, do you have an epiphany? You know, be aware of an epiphany. Do you need to act on your epiphany? You know, the ripple effect, it's powerful, and it's more than just about you and your epiphany. It's about all of us together, and I think that we're all experiencing something very divine and special right now, Elise, sharing, you know, the stories that you have in this book and what some others might be feeling and wanting to say. So, you know, I am amazed. I don't know how long it took you to write this book, but I am just amazed at all of the stories and how different they are, but how they're all so much the same as well.
Yeah, isn't that, that's what I love about it. To me, I mean, I didn't know. I had no idea going into this project, first of all, that epiphanies would be so profound. You know, when I first started asking people, I was just like, these are interesting. People are interesting when they tell me the stories. They're entertaining. They're entertaining stories usually because they're personal and they're always sort of they're very entertaining. But more than that, what started happening is I started thinking about what they told me much later. I would be utilizing what they told me in my life. I could take the wisdom of what they shared with me that was completely unrelated, but the wisdom from it I was able to incorporate into my life. And that's when I went, wow, I really have something here. These are really important, you know? Mm. And so that's why I went on the journey that I did with it. And you're absolutely right. I had no idea that the transformational effect it would have on my life, on other people's lives, in just sharing them with me. People had experiences. They got epiphanies from sharing their own epiphanies. And when you said some people, they would say to me, I don't think I've ever had an epiphany. And then they'd come back to me later and say, you know, I do think I've had one. And some of their epiphanies were the most profound. You know what I mean? Mm. It was just, and they were emotional. And then they rediscovered, or you rediscover other moments in the moment for yourself, you know?
Very, very true.
And wider. And you're exactly right. This is for me and for many others. But since I'm, you know, have the privilege of spending so much time with it and getting to interview all these people and read the ones that come in, that you're exactly right. This is a celebration, for me at least, of how we're all so very different. We're very, very different with very, very different backgrounds, very different belief systems, values, very different experiences, life experiences. However, these particular moments celebrate that, as well as how we're all also the same.
Absolutely.
And how we can learn from each other, you know?
Right. It's just kind of a shameless plug, but I think this would be a great Christmas gift, so I want people to consider that as well. But I just want for listeners, the book is broken up into different categories. So for one category, there's awakenings, and Elise has certain people in there about these awakening epiphanies. And then she has another section called New Directions. I want to talk about Dr. Mehmet Oz's story from that, and I found that especially interesting. But yeah. Healings, miracles, coming of age, callings, and I think in your introduction you give a good foundation for the reader to be, you know, prepared to, okay, this is, you know, it's like packing for a trip. Okay, this is what we're going to bring. This is what you need to have, your open mind and all of these things that are going to help you enjoy the journey of the pages that you're about to embrace. But this particular story with Mehmet Oz, you know, I think a lot of times people see him on TV. You say, well, you know, what makes him tick? I remember when I was in cardiac surgery sales, and I was in the Boston area, and they would talk about Mehmet Oz as being, you know, an up-and-coming cardiac surgeon. But that was before he was famous. He was just a cardiac surgeon like every other cardiac surgeon that I would meet at conventions or that people would talk about. And, you know, this story with him about, well, you know, surgeons need to tell you how it is and how you need to be. And then he had a patient who was needed a blood transfusion he'd worked hard to save, who was a Jehovah's Witness. And they said, no, no blood transfusion. And this epiphany that he had, that it was out of their love for this person and their faith and their belief. And he just had a real shift, didn't he, for the rest of his life on how he interacted and looked at his patients and his whole dynamic between how he related to the patient and what he felt his responsibility was became much more a place of service and humility rather than I'm going to tell you. And isn't it interesting now to see what he's done with that perception, that epiphany, in his TV shows and Oprah and all of that? Tell us a little bit more about him and that epiphany.
Well, Mehmet and I produced his exercise videos that go with his U books. So I've known him for a while, and I had no idea this was his epiphany. I'd never read about it anywhere. I had no idea what his epiphany would be, and I just found this one very profound and interesting. And he also said it not only changed the way he listens to his patients, but it changed how he listened to everybody, to all people. It changed his relationships in every area of his life. About listening to people with respect, you don't have to agree with them, but it's about respecting one another and their perspective and then working with that worldview, which I think is a very interesting thing to be thinking about and mulling over right now in the heat of all this political discourse we have happening right now. You know, about we don't have to agree, but to really, truly listen. Again, see, it goes back to listening. Listening, paying attention, and respecting, you know. And so he also said that it also taught him that the patient really knows what's going on with them. It led to him really understanding that they really know what's going on with them. And if the doctor listens to what the patient is saying about what's going on with them, then they can help the patient more. And I want to encourage people. I actually just had someone reach out to me because their father was having, they were referred to get triple bypass or something. And they wanted to talk to Mehmet who was out of town and can't do that since he has the show, blah, blah, blah. But I just said, look, go read this epiphany because you'll see that Mehmet said, I go, how does your dad feel about all this? You know, how does the patient feel? I think a lot of times we give our authority away, to outside authorities. And what he's saying is one of the best cardiac surgeons and one of the best doctors, maybe according to, you know, polls and whatever, what we all know, is he's saying, listen to yourself. Know about yourself. Educate yourself about health. Read those books they put out. Do you know what I mean? That was the bigger message for me besides this deep listening and respect for other people and a humility that he's taken on, you know?
Mm.
And he said, you know, I didn't agree with what that family did, but for them, that was the highest and best. And he goes, quite frankly, that's what the patient would have wanted.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So it's just it's
complex.
You know, people feel like things are right and wrong, and it's complex, but he takes it to another level. And you know, his whole thing is about, you know, there's knowledge and information, but what we're going for is understanding and awareness in life.
Yeah, the understanding and the awareness. I mean, there's a different thing. You can read something, you can learn something. It's the old, you know, you can catch me the fish or you can teach me how to fish. You know, it's a big difference. I eat one day or a lifetime. And I think that that is really so cool. You know, expanding on that thought, I noticed with the stories, it wasn't as though, and if somebody's out there listening saying, okay, well, that's fine for these people, or, you know, you don't have to work hard to find your epiphany. Your epiphany will find you wherever you are.
Yeah.
And this project, Smile, with Bill and Kathy McGee,
oh, yeah.
I love that story. And I think that listeners will really enjoy it as well, because they were just doing, you know, again, another doctor situation, but they were doing something they weren't thinking was anything extraordinary. They were going, they were working with the cleft palates and working in the surgery, and this one, and all these people that wanted to have their children be helped. And this woman who brings him bananas, because that's all she has. All I could think of was the Christ Child and the Three Magi. You know, they're like, we're just bringing whatever we have, or the little drummer boy, you know, those stories that you hear at Christmas. I mean, all she had was bananas. I mean, just that's all she had to give him was bananas. And he was so touched, because he said he wanted to say, well, we'll be back here next year, but he knew that they wouldn't be back next year. And how that really came to be, Project Smile. Can you share a little bit about that? Because
sure.
This story, I think, for me personally, was probably my favorite.
Oh, they were just out here doing their annual fundraiser. They run Operation Smile. They're a married couple. They were high school sweethearts. I love that. And they were the only. I interviewed several married couples, but usually each person had their own separate epiphany, greatest epiphany in life. And this particular couple had their epiphany together, which was very interesting to me. And so they were on, as you said, they were on a trip to help, you know, on a volunteer trip to help people in, where were they, the Philippines, I think, to help heal cleft palates. And they couldn't get to everybody. And he just realized that we could so easily help these people. And, you know, I didn't know this, and also this is the other thing about epiphanies. I don't know if you found this, but I learned a little bit about something about life that's going on out there that I didn't know before, whether it's about science or something like this, or you know, something about education or whatever. And you know, in other countries, when someone has a hare lip or a cleft palate, they are shunned from society. It's very hard for them to eat, so sometimes they're malnourished and even die from this. And they usually never can get a job. They never get married. They never have full lives. It's a serious situation. And in America, it gets easily taken care of, you know. We're very fortunate that way. And so he was so struck by it, and so was his wife, who had been a nurse. And the other thing that's very important to them is they had one of their children with them. They have, I think it's 5 children, and they had one of their children with them, and I think she was 13. And so they went back and said, we've got to go back and help. How can we do this? And they, just because of that epiphany they basically had together in that moment of all these people, it only costs $240 to completely change a child's life forever. You give them a shot at having a normal life. That's it. Do you know what I mean? I mean, for Americans, that's really not that much money for that. Do you know what I'm saying? It's not like, it's an amazing thing. And they have spread all over the world. They have thousands and thousands. And what they also do is set up clinics so that they can self-sustain. So that they train people there, that they just keep going in that country. So it's a really cool organization, and they did it right there having, and it was interesting because just like a side weird thing I never talk about, but this guy that was my friend helped me do my first trailer for Epiphany before I got the book deal. Like, I needed it and I didn't really have any money, and this guy did it. He made the trailer for me so that I could go pitch the book, and he wouldn't take any money. And he was a big. This is a passion for him. He's the one that first ever told me about it. He goes, he didn't even name it. He goes, there are some organizations where I only pay $240, and I can change an entire kid's face, their life. You know, he was telling me this. So he wouldn't take any money. So when I got the book deal, I donated to this company, and then I ended up interviewing them. It was just so. See how it's interesting how the ripple effect happens?
You know? I love it. I love it. And, you know, I think that, you know, one of the things that I hope that we all can take away from this gift of you collecting these beautiful stories for us is that we can all remember how valuable, how precious our epiphany is for everybody else, and being connected and knowing that it is our responsibility to share our shine with the world, and that the world does need us, because each person's epiphany, each person interacts with different people. And, you know, I always think, if, you know, 25 cents, oh, that doesn't seem like much money. But if you took every single person, you know, in the United States of America, or, you know, any country in the world, and everybody pitched in 25 cents, you'd be a multimillionaire or a billionaire, you know? And I think that these little things do mean a lot. And I think of these beautiful stories that I've always loved in my life. You know, the starfish story, the kid that puts the one in, and the old man saying, you know, you can't make a difference. And he's like, yeah, well, it made a difference to that one. You know, think about in my own life, my parents, you know, dying of cancer, my grandmother dying in my arms. And it was like, well, it was just me and my grandmother in that moment when she passed away and gave her last breath as I was holding her and looking into her eyes. That was just one person with one other person. But you know what? That changed me. That was her moment of leaving, you know, this physical world. It, you know, these little moments, and the irony that these little things are what really means so much. And to try to get some new vision on, to look at the world in this way, is what I think these stories can do for people, and just the freedom and the peace in reading them. You know, this Project Smile, I just wanted to share a couple of sentences from his story, because talking about it, he says, in that instant, I realized that the key to teaching is not all the education and degrees and the latest fancy techniques. It's having the patience and determination, the understanding and the love for the kids, the perseverance to keep going. That's all you need. And, of course, a little bit of humor helps, too. When I'm building up their confidence, I'm also building up mine. Mm-hmm. And I think that, to me, in every story I noticed, the more each person followed through, as you said, in action to their epiphany, the more they were gifted from doing so. You know, they kept, it was like overflowing in abundance, the gifts they were getting by following through on these epiphanies that they had had. Did you find that it's surprising, or was that just something that you think is standard when everybody has an epiphany?
Well, you know, as every single person that had a life-changing epiphany, you know, that shared them with me, they took action. And it's interesting that you're bringing this up. And I just can't reiterate this enough. I think a lot of people feel stuck or scared, like, what can I do? You know, and some people took huge steps towards their epiphany, but most of us took tiny baby steps. For instance, in my epiphany, my baby step was, all I could do, I went on Craigslist and I looked at sublets. I couldn't even look at regular leases, right? Because it was just too much for me to think about leaving my marriage and getting my own place and really, you know, taking that big of a commitment away. But a sublet, I could handle. And so I looked for 2 weeks on Craigslist until I saw one that was kind of interesting, and I emailed that one. And that is the one that fell into place. You see, like the second, and then I got that. And that, so, and crazy magical stuff happened after that. I just kept following what was presented to me. Bill and Kathy McGee, for instance, we just talked about Operation Smile. They came home from that epiphany like, what can we do? We've got to do something about this. And they said they just sat around their kitchen table talking about it. And the other, and when they brought their child, they realized they have 5 kids, that they've always included their kids and their kids' friends. That's how it started, with their friends in the neighborhood helping them go the next year. And
you
then,
know,
it's just like, it's just tiny steps, but you take the first one and you'll see the second one is revealed.
you know, nothing to me echoes what you just said more than that. Was it Nancy Ballard, the registered nurse?
Exactly. That's a perfect one to talk about.
You know, and she was, I think, and I don't mean to be exaggerating here, but was she like 200 and something pounds? Or
no,
I mean,
she was 300 pounds.
Okay, 300
pounds. She said she'd been obese her entire life pretty much.
Okay, and she, all right, so those of us out there who want to lose some weight, I mean, this woman was 300 pounds, and she'd just been living her life like that and, you know, was watching, I think it was just one day she was watching Oprah, and
mm-hmm.
she was.
And she never watches television. She just happened to be home and turned it on, and it was Oprah.
Yeah, just happened. Don't you love that? That's another divine intervention moment. I love it. Just happened, another God incident. And she watched, and there was somebody there who had lost a lot of weight and just went and said, well, I put my shoes on, I started to walk, and every day I did that, and I put one foot in front of the other, and what was it? She just said, you know what? I can do that. I can do that. And right at the end of the show, she just said, well, I'm going to tie my shoelaces on, and I'm just going to, you know, walk those baby steps. I mean, you'll
yep.
say it better than me. I apologize.
No,
but, you know,
I think you've done such a beautiful job. You're better at it than me summarizing the stories because I know them so well and want to tell every detail, and it's bad because I go on too long. But,
no, it's beautiful. It's really beautiful. But I when you were saying about, because I think for me, you know, we can all be like that. That perfectionist in some of us is like, well, I gotta, you know, I'd love to have that epiphany, and then, but it seems too big. But this particular story, as you were saying, is very small baby steps. That's all it takes, a small baby step.
Yeah.
So this woman, and now what is she? She's stuck. She's lost weight.
She ended
weight.
Up losing, yeah, when she said, I can do that, when the woman on television, I guess Oprah had asked her, how did you lose all this weight? The woman had lost like 140 pounds or something, and she'd been obese like Nancy. And Nancy had been on, I think she was up to 5 different diabetes medications. She had onset diabetes because of her weight. She was on all this medication. And so the woman said, I put on my tennis shoes and tied them and went on a walk. And Nancy said, suddenly she just went, I can do that. And she says the first time she ever said, I wish I could do that, I want to do that, I can't do that, she for the first time said, I can do that. And she put on her tennis shoes and tied her shoelaces and went outside and walked for 30 minutes and walked 30 minutes back. And she said, I walked in the door and knew everything had changed. And I have chills when I say that because I know that feeling. I'm sure most of us do. We've had one moment where suddenly we knew everything changed, like our cells shifted, you know. And for her, that's what happened, and she started eating differently. She was an RN, so she knew what she needed to do to lose weight. She just couldn't ever do it. And she is off all of her medication now. She completely controls her diabetes with exercise and diet, and she's never gained a pound back. She lost like 160 pounds in a year, I think.
Mm.
And she feels great, and, you know, her whole life has changed. And it was that one moment, and like you said, literally taking steps out the door
in
the heat of the summer.
Quite literally.
Yeah.
You know, they're all very, again, I just keep repeating myself, they're very different, but they're very much the same. And, you know, I'm dating myself here because I grew up in that time where Barry Manilow, you know, he was the big deal.
Oh, I just love him.
Oh, I know. And so when I listened to his story, I felt like you were here telling me the story as I was reading the book because it's so conversational. But I was reading his story, and it was interesting that his epiphany really came from his stepdad.
Yeah.
And how he just had, you know, Jewish kid, New York, just had a certain paradigm of what music was. And here his mom's second husband, I guess his stepdad, Willie Murphy, had just opened his mind to all these different things in music and songs and what was possible. And he didn't have a lot of money, and he saved enough money for Barry Manilow to be able to have a piano. And it was hard. He was a truck driver, you know, and the only thing he had was an accordion. He wasn't going to to be able to write too many songs with that, right? And so this, the pennies and the savings to get him that piano and changed his life. And I love this story. It says, Willie Murphy and his stack of gold was my epiphany. I wish that every kid had a Willie in his life. Willie and his music sent me on my way to the life I have now. I'll always be grateful to him. Without him, I'd be playing my accordion outside a bakery in Williamsburg. I just know it. I love that story.
So cute. I know. I know. When we all, when we got it, we were all like crying. Oh, so cute. I know. You know, and when you talk about, I divided the book into those six sections, I want everyone to understand that an epiphany could be all of those things. We just divided it into one section when it was the most glaring of one of those six categories that you talked about, awakenings. And but his is in, but an epiphany could be one of those things, all of those things, three of those things, and many other things than what we came up with. But it was just for the ease of the reader. But his is in the calling section of the book. And they were the epiphanies that we got that put someone into the career and the calling, the vocation that they're doing now. And what I found very interesting, you know, because basically I'm not a scientist, you know what I'm saying? I'm a storyteller, and I collected all of these stories. But what's happened is, because I'm kind of like a social experiment, I've been able to see the patterns in all of these epiphanies. That's why I talk about the four things that happen every time. I can tell you with conviction and with fact that that happens in every single life-changing epiphany that I've heard so thus far. And in this section of people that the epiphany seemed to put them on their calling and in their career, one of the overriding patterns, when someone had their epiphanies as a kid, and I just spoke it to kids at TED, and I talked about this for them, that I just said, you know, what I wish someone would have told me at their age, that they can have their greatest epiphany in life. They can be having them right now. And usually it was about their gifts and talents calling to them. And then what the difference was is that the people in my book, they followed that, and they had parents that supported that and helped them do that. And a lot of times, you know, for whatever reason, it was the father that had a huge, huge impact in this way. And I wrote about it for Psychology Today, and I talk about it. You know, someone just commented to me on Facebook from the TED Talk that they were going to show their kids. It was a guy, and I just said, you know, that's so great because, you know, Barry Manilow's is a great one, Diane Warren's, John Layman. Again, very people with very different backgrounds and experiences, but yet their father had a huge role in their epiphanies getting to fruition. And their parents in general, you know, the support of the parent. And I just think it's an interesting and important thing to bring up because it's something that I've noticed over and over and over again.
Absolutely fascinating. And, you know, for people out there, and again, I'm going to plug that this is a great gift for you or someone else. You know, there's so many people that you're going to recognize in this book. Desmond Tutu, what a fascinating, you know, Nobel Peace Prize winner. Gosh. And just his faith, and just to read those pages, that alone is worth, you know, the whole book. But then there's other people. You talk about your fifth grade teacher, and
yeah.
You know, people that we can all say, I have that person in my life. There was a story of a man, and I know we're running out of time, and didn't have that particular page mark, but I'm just thinking of it for some reason. The man, he was a criminal, and he was an atheist, and he was in jail, and he was his
Gregory
body
Wilson.
Was. Who was that? Tell
Gregory
about that.
Gregory Wilson, the magician.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, he used his. He was a magician, very very talented, and he had ended up using it to be a thief. He was a card shark and was a shoplifter and was making millions as a thief, and developed a disease. He didn't tell anybody and developed a disease and basically said, you know, if you get me out of this disease, I'll listen to you, like kind of like a threat or, you know, a challenge to God.
Right.
Yeah. And he ended up getting caught and he ended up in jail and he did it again and ended up having one of those, as you brought up earlier, sort of a Paul on the road to Damascus type epiphany. You know, his whole life flashed before his eyes and light went through him and that kind of thing. And he became a Christian. And the weird thing, he went in for his trial and the DA had told him, you know, I'm taking you down. You're going to get at least 2 years. And they lost all of his paperwork.
He happened to lose all the paperwork.
they lost all the paperwork, and he also found some book that told him to take cod liver oil or something. Anyway, his disease went away as well. So he has devoted his life.
Yeah, I think he said, God and the cod.
Yes,
God and the cod.
God, the cod and cod cure. And so he now he's back to being a top magician, and also he does a lot of speaking to people about how they can easily get deceived. So he goes and is showing people, you know, so they're not deceived. He's
unbelievable.
Made that.
You know,
I'm
looking at Vicky's in the chat room. I love her radio show. She's another radio host. She's in Greece.
Vicky,
I'm telling you, I'm getting to Greece one day. I tell her all the time. I'm going out there. She's like, you can come, I'll take you around, because that's one of my bucket list things. I have to go to Greece. And she's cracking me up. Not only is she telling me she understands the Barry Manilow song from that era, she's telling me that happens in Greece. People all the time are promising saints that they'll build churches for them if they get their healing. And, you know, I just, there's so many stories that make you smile, laugh, cry. I mean, it's just a collage of emotions, and not one should be missed, because it really brings, you know, it really puts you into life. It kind of turns the light bulb on in your whole body. I just love these stories, and I can see why it's a best-selling book, and I know that other people will love getting it to read for themselves, to pass along, to put in a book club, perhaps. I think it would be a great book club book, a great gift, Hanukkah, Christmas, New Year's. Maybe somebody's bummed out, and, you know, the nice thing about the book, Elise, is you don't have to read it from cover to cover, even though I did. You could just pick it up. And each one of these stories, everybody, they're only a couple pages long. Some of them are, you know, 2, 3, 5. But you just get that little punch, that little vitamin, that little shift, you know, to wake you up and just help you into a new way of thinking, feeling, doing, being. And I think that that's what the value in these stories. It's priceless from that perspective. But I want to make sure, before we run out of time, how people can connect with you on your website, because in your book you say, this project has been the greatest epiphany of my life. It has left me changed and has led me both to learning and to healing. That's been my experience, and now I want you to have yours. And you have a place on your website for people to share their epiphany. So tell us about that, how people can connect with you, get the book, and share their epiphany.
Oh, great. Yes, please go check us out at epiphanychannel.com. On the homepage, you'll see buttons where you can go get the book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and various outlets. There are videos you can go watch. We went to the Nobel Prizes and interviewed the Nobel Prize winners. There's a couple of my TED Talks on there and different videos. If you go to the people section, you can go see everybody that was in the book, plus some other epiphanies we've gotten, and a lot of them are filmed. You can share your epiphany. There's a button on the homepage as well called Share Your Epiphany, and you can write as long as you want your stories. People share those with us all the time. You can follow us on Facebook. We have a fan page, Epiphany Channel fan page, Twitter, all of that. There's a blog that I put up new articles and new epiphanies that we're getting. And so all of it, if you go to epiphanychannel.com, and you can see more about me, and you can write me there if you'd like. And so it's all there, and you can usually, everyone's found everything on that homepage. You can figure out everything from there. So we'd love for you to join our community and join in the fun and the inspiration and share your epiphany with us.
Wow. So final words for folks out there. What do you want them, besides the first action, going to your website when they hang up, what would you like them to do for themselves today to help them celebrate themselves and their epiphany?
Well, you know, I always encourage people. I just taught a class for the Entheos Academy in the spring, and that is also on the website. It's got, you know, we go into depth in studying epiphanies, what they are, the history of them, and then those four steps we talked about, we go into depth about how we can actually do that in our lives in deeper and more profound ways and different exercises and such. And I think one of them, I think today, just think about what would you say your greatest epiphany in life is, you know? And I find a lot of power. And say you think, well, it's not that great, whatever. Don't judge yourself. Write it down. There's a lot of power in that. And just mull it over, and you'll find not only, you know, you had more epiphanies than you thought. That happened with me and everyone else I've talked to, basically. But you'll start noticing the little ones in your life more. And that's, like I said, you'll start seeing that you'll get more and more revelations in your life every day, and it just, life gets so much more exciting and inspiring when you do. And sharing your epiphanies with people too. I encourage the loved ones to share with each other, because it's like you never know the impact you'll have, and these stories have such a profound impact. So at least if you discover what your epiphany is, try to share it with someone that you love, or share it with us. But I would just be thinking about these moments for yourself.
Yeah, I love it. And writing it down really makes it so real. But, you know, you can write it down. You can do two. You can write it down for yourself, which is the exercise Elise gave us all. And then you can write it down and copy it and put it on her website. So now you can do two for the one. You know,
exactly.
It's like, is that great? Recycle the happiness type thing. Well, I you know, I'm so sad we're out of time. You'll have to come back and keep us informed on, you know, the new work that you do, the new epiphanies you hear about, and share your shine with us again. It's just been such a blast, Elise, and you're awesome.
Thank you. Oh, you are. Great. Thank you so much for having me on. It was an absolute joy, and I appreciate it. Hopefully I will talk to you very soon about our next things coming down the pike.
Absolutely. Great book. I can see why it's a bestseller. And just, it's the gift that keeps on giving. Give it to yourself, someone you know or love. And thank you so much for having us, almost 300,000 download listeners strong. You know, this show wouldn't be going and growing if it wasn't for you out there. Share this show with a friend. If Elise Ballard has touched your heart, if her book Epiphany and the stories that she shared with you has changed your heart, go and spread that. Throw those seeds out in the ground so that you can start growing a new garden in someone's life. And that's how we all help each other. And then you might be the catalyst to inspire somebody else's epiphany. So make sure you connect with Elise Ballard on the Epiphany channel. Find her on Facebook and Twitter. Share your show with her. Write down your epiphany. And be sure to join us back tomorrow. We have two special shows for you. I just, so many amazing people in the world that we have to get on and Best People We Know Club. So make sure you tune in with us. And don't forget, as in the famous words of Oscar Wilde, to be yourself, because everybody else is already taken. Thank you for being a blessing and joining us today. We appreciate and love you. Go out and make it a great day. Thank you
for listening to the Best People We Know radio show with your host, Deb Scott. For more on Deb and her guests, plus her award-winning guidebook to transformation, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue, Turning Your Upside-Down World Right Side Up, go to Deb's website, greenskyandbluegrass.com. You can also connect with Deb for coaching or speaking, and sign up for Deb's free Mind Vitamin newsletter while you're there. So now, you're one step closer today to your greatness. We look forward to being with you next time on the Best People We Know radio show.